podcast is a service of Bridgeway Community Church in Rockford, Michigan. Thanks for listening. Here's today's message.
Well, good morning, Bridgeway. I want to add my words of welcome. It's so good to be here together with you today. I'm excited to get to share the story and the message of Jesus with you. And I'm just excited to be together, kind of in this grand experience that is Bridgeway Community Church. I want to take a moment, too, because I know we'll have many people watching this online as well, and just want to simply acknowledge that though we may be apart, we are not alone. It's just good to be a community. So whether you're here or whether you're with us at home, at church online, we're just so grateful to be this community together. If you're new, if you're visiting with us, we've been in a series of talks trying to figure out how to deal with a very messy world that we live in right now. In fact, my proposal has been to you, how do we really love others when that isn't easy? That kind of feels messy, kind of feels difficult. You want to go against the grain of loving people, and instead you want to kind of just speak your mind to them. And instead, we have this opportunity to love others, and that could be messy. We've been kind of taking a long-range view. We've been looking at the world, how messy the world is at times, and then we kind of been bringing that down to messy people around us, and then in the last few weeks, we've been trying to get really laser focused and deal with ourselves to really address the mess, if we're honest, that is our own lives and that we have to own up to and say, hey, I'm part of this mess in the world. And so I want to do that again today, and I want to jump right into things because I've done my research, and I think I can tell you honestly that I've figured it out. There are two categories of people. There are, number one, people that you love to be around. Matter of fact, church, just do me a favor right now. Just kind of in your mind, get that person. Who's that person that you just love to be with, right? Like, just love to be around them. Could be your spouse, could be your friend, could be your fishing buddy, could be, like, the reading group you're a part of, your exercise group, could be people that you swap recipes with. You love to be with this people. They are your people. They are your tribe. And you love to be with them. I know something about that group of people. You love to be with them because those people are considerate. They are generous. They make you feel good about yourself. They're kind towards you. And here's the deal. If you could, you would eat Chick-fil-A with these people every single day for the rest of your life. But you can't because there's a second category of people. And those are the people that annoy you. They get under your skin. They have habits that bother you. They talk too much. They don't talk enough. They're way too conservative. Oh, they're so liberal. They do things that just annoy you. They're messy. They're too neat. They post too much on social media. They grow out their beard in the summertime. Who does that, right? Like, I'm so jealous. I just am, right? Like, who does that? And they just annoy you. And then here's the irony of it all. If you live for, you know, more than 3 minutes, you'll find that these two groups of people, ironically, become one. And the people that you love the most are also the people that, at times, can annoy you the most. And it becomes this question, how do I deal with those people? We're kind of in this global pandemic. We're dealing with kind of this unusual experiment of forced closeness together. And I would just dare bet that some of the people in your home have become annoying to you at times, maybe just once, maybe just a couple times over the last 4 months together. In fact, it's raising all sorts of questions of how we live in this day and age. In fact, some things that are very interesting that are going to come out of this. In fact, sociologists are already marking that 9 months from now, we'll probably experience the second greatest baby boom that our country has ever had. I was doing some thinking about that and actually projecting out 13 years from there, 2033, we'll have a whole new category of young adults, of children. Teenagers, we'll have to call them quarantines. We really will. That's a dad joke. You can use that later if you want, right? But being together isn't always good. It raises all sorts of other issues. In fact, you look at things, how things have escalated on the home front. Domestic violence is increasing. Stress has increased. Anxiety, depression have all been on the rise. And it takes a toll on the home. In fact, when the pandemic first hit, I found it so shocking that there was a surge. Google reported that there was a surge in the number one search for a while was, how do I get a divorce? It's exhausting, it's stressful, it's messy. And given enough time and enough closeness, you'll have to learn and deal with the fact that there are people that annoy you. Now, just quick public service announcement. If you're here this morning, you're like, Pastor, I don't have any annoying people in my life. I want to let you know, all you have to do is simply call the church office. We keep a list of annoying people, and we'd be happy to... No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't work that way. You know, but you ever think about that? Why do people annoy us? Why is that the case? I mean, is it just because everyone, I mean, all people are bad, right? Like, is that the reason? No, of course not. The reason is there's this problem that we have to deal with, that we have this problem called sin. And there's error and wrong and human sinfulness. And the reality is it's far easier for me to see what's wrong, what's errant, what's sinful about someone else rather than addressing that inside of me. So we want to do that again today. And today I want to specifically look at how to deal with annoying people. We've been looking in this series at how does Jesus deal with messy people. And today I want to look at a story that, frankly, I've never taught. I've never taught this this story in the Bible, and partly because I think I've always thought there's more to this story than just kind of the simple application that I've heard all my life growing up in the church, and I hope to share maybe something a little bit new in the perspective of this. But when you see the life of Jesus, you see that he had this incredible ability to deal with all sorts of different people. And we're going to look at the story in Luke chapter 17, where Jesus heals 10 men with leprosy. If you have your Bible this morning, I'd love for you to follow along in your Bible, in your electronic Bible. We'll also have all the words on the screen here, Sky Bible for you as well. But Jesus is right now making his way to Jerusalem. It's kind of a turning point in the story and life of Jesus. He's making his way to Jerusalem, and Jerusalem will be a place where God's people would gather for years and years and years, a holy city. And in this city... people would come and come to the temple. And Jerusalem should be a place of incredible peace. In fact, the word Jerusalem has, as kind of the root in the name, the word shalom, should be a place of peace. But Jesus is going to be met in Jerusalem with incredible violence and brutality. Jesus would be flogged, and then he would be crucified. He would be murdered. Innocent man murdered. Now, that in and of itself should be annoying. But it's for our forgiveness of all of our sins. And on his way, he meets this group of 10 lepers, and I want you to see how he deals with the situation. Luke chapter 17, starting in verse 11. It says, "Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, 'Jesus, Master, have pity on us.'" Now, I want to pause here for just a moment because there's a lot going on kind of behind the scenes in this story. In fact, the first part about this, I already told you, Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, but he's sort of skirting this line. He's between this border between Samaria and Galilee. Now, a quick history lesson. Galilee is where Jesus and the disciples are from. In Galilee, you were a Jew. And the Jewish people considered themselves to be sort of the righteous, holy followers of God. And they shared a disdain, a hatred for anyone on the other side of that border in Samaria. They considered them to be half-breeds, to have kind of allowed sin to enter their life. They'd intermarried, and they looked down upon them. What you need to know before you even read the rest of the story is this is a story that would have been very charged emotionally. It would have been very racially charged in the way in which Jesus is coming right along this border. And I think a lot of times, as I've said many, many times in this series, we think that racism is a new thing and we need like a new solution. In fact, racism goes all the way back to the day of Jesus. And the solution is still the same. It's coming and really seeing how Jesus shows love and care to all people. That's not really the point of this message today, but that should always be the point, is seeing how Jesus stands for reconciliation and for equality for all. But you see that on the way, he meets these 10 men, and I think this story could play out today, right? I mean, these 10 men have leprosy, and it says they're standing at a distance. We would use language today like they're socially distancing themselves, right? They've got a skin disease. In fact, in that day, if you If you had leprosy, leprosy is a generic term, could mean any number of skin diseases, but you were removed from the community, didn't want to get anyone else with your skin disease sick, and so you would have to be removed from the community. It'd be incredibly shameful, it'd be incredibly isolating. In fact, these men are calling out, they're standing at a distance. One scholar said that the actual distance a leper would have to stay from the community is 16 feet. So here we are, we're social distancing, 6 feet in our day. And that day, if you had leprosy, if you had a skin disease, 16 feet of separation. Now, we still have skin diseases. We talk far more about COVID-19 nowadays, but we have all kinds of skin diseases. I'm gonna save you on this. Do not Google this. I made the mistake of Googling. What are skin diseases today? There are thousands of skin diseases. Don't do an image search on skin diseases. I'm just trying to help you out here. I mean, there's psoriasis, and there's chicken pox, and I've got wrestlers in my home, and so we've had to, over the years, deal with ringworm and staph infection. Some of you are like, Pastor, why are you telling me all of this? Stay in your lane. You're not a doctor. You know, I'm telling you all of this because it would have been really, really isolating. I mean, these men calling out, there's emotion behind them in trying to understand, is Jesus possibly able to help us? I can relate to these 10 men in maybe a new way after kind of my family recently was exposed to COVID-19. In fact, some of you have even asked, hey, Pastor, I haven't seen you in the past couple weeks. I'll be honest, it wasn't a vacation. We were having to kind of go through a process of quarantining ourselves. My daughter tested positive, and since we all live together, seven of us, one big happy family in a 1,600 square foot home, we had to all get tested as well. Very grateful, the six of us did not. We all tested negative, so we did not have COVID-19. But out of, obviously, concern and precaution, concern really for the church body, we quarantined, stayed away. I've actually been away for about 20 days from human contact. Human beings look just amazing. You guys are just an amazing race of people, right? And so it's good to be back together in community. But I can relate to these guys because, you know, we've been so careful. We've been wearing our mask and kind of keeping distance. And I'm not very good at not touching my face. So I think if anyone was going to get it, it was going to be me. And I just remember thinking, like, why? Why did this happen to us? And my daughter, some have asked, she had extremely mild symptoms. I mean, the very, very mild version of this. But we had to be careful. And you can ask my kids how much they loved going back into quarantine and having their life shut back down. It was not pleasant. There was a lot of weeping and gnashing of teeth in the home front. And now that we're kind of on the other side of that, I look back and I think I was asking God so often, like, why? Why did that happen? And, you know, I'm around a lot of people in the church, and contact tracing on me is not a simple task. And so, why, God? Why? We didn't do anything to deserve this, and my daughter didn't do anything to deserve this. And I could kind of sense my own level of feeling like a leper, feeling isolated and even alone a little bit. And I think Jesus knew exactly how these men felt. In fact, watch what he says to them from a distance. Next verse, verse 14. It says, when he saw them, he said, go show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. It's a miracle. One of them, though, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Kind of the twist in the whole story, the whole plot. The one that comes back, the one that should be despised, the one that doesn't know better about the way faith works, the one, disdained, disliked, hated, comes back worshiping God. Now, I think this is just an incredibly amazing story. Jesus says, go show yourself to the priest. Now, in that day, we know one thing about this group. Since they were on this border, some of them, the nine of them, were Jews. And the Jewish law, the Torah, said that if by some reason you had a skin disease and through medicine or through miracle you were healed, and you wanted to come back into community, back into your temple, back into church, back into your family life, then you had to go show yourself to the priest. This would have been one of the things that I think wouldn't have been very cool about being a pastor back in that day. You were actually charged with the responsibility of doing a skin check. You know, I'm just saying, go to your doctor, friend, seriously. And, you know, pastor would have to say, hey, you look healthy enough to come back into community. And I imagine that for these 10, as they went, it must have just been so amazing and freeing, right? Like they're walking along, they're on their way to go see the priest, and And you can just kind of, you know, we just have to kind of read between the lines. Like, I wonder how it happened. I wonder if the one, the Samaritan, I wonder if as he was walking, kind of like, hey, wait a minute. Bob, look at my nose. Is it really big? Like, do I have a big schnoz? It's a miracle. Like, my nose is back. Larry, let me see your fingers. Count your fingers. 1, 2, 3. 10 fingers. Breakfast this morning, you had 3. Like, this is amazing, right? I mean, I imagine these guys are just high-fiving, pushing each other into the bushes. I mean, this would have been like such a happy day. But then the conversation must have shifted, right? Because only the one goes back. And the other 9 are like, nope, our religion, our faith, our tradition says, go show yourself to the priest. And I bet this one, so confused, he's like, well, wait a minute, I want to go back to that guy. I think he was the priest. I think he did this. And you can just imagine this. I mean, how annoying would that be for the one? And how annoying would that be for the 9 even? Like, what do you mean? Like, we're going to see the priest. That's the way you do it. Come on, get yourself together. And now I know you hear this story, and actually the first time I read through this, I kind of wanted to cut the 9 a little bit of a slack, right? Like, I mean, they are doing what Jesus told them to do. They're following through. They're being obedient to God. But watch what happens, and watch what Jesus says at the conclusion of the story, picking back up in verse 17. Jesus asked the one, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go, your faith has made you well. Such an amazing story, the way in which Jesus kind of works and moves and really draws the best out of, I think, every single person in this story. But I think this is the part, if I'm honest, this had to have been annoying. I mean, like I said, it must have been annoying for the Samaritan. I mean, like, come on, guys, this is like first grade. You go back and you thank the one who did something for you. And I think, I mean, honestly, it had to have been annoying for Jesus. You look at his words, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? I mean, I think Jesus had to have been annoyed. I mean, let me just ask you, I think about myself, I mean, if I do something nice for someone, or let me just put it on you, like, if you do something nice for someone, let's say you loan somebody some money, or you help someone get a job, or let's just say this, you go above and beyond. You watch somebody's 4-year-old, 2-year-old, and 6-month-old so that they can go out on a date, right? Like, you do that, and then you never hear from that person again. I mean, you're, like, ghosted for the rest of life. I mean, you can't tell me you wouldn't be just a little bit annoyed, right? I mean, just a little bit. Like, seriously, come on, people. And I know what you're thinking. No, Pastor, that's not what this story is about. This story is about being grateful, right? And it's because people like me have stood on stages like this and have said, hey, you got to have an attitude of gratitude. You got to be thankful at all the time. And I don't want to diminish that. I think that's definitely a part of this story. Being grateful and being faithful are certainly core to what it means to follow Jesus. But I think this story actually shows us a little bit more about how Jesus really acts and what Jesus really does for all of humanity. I mean, think about this. I mean, that's all true, but I think what's so interesting is, what does Jesus do in this moment? I mean, you look at these 10 individuals. I mean, all of them, right? How does Jesus treat them? Weren't they all blessed? Weren't they all healed? Weren't they all restored? I mean, even the ones that didn't go back, as annoying as that is to us, I wonder if this begins to kind of open up for us kind of this idea that, you know, if Jesus isn't really annoyed with these men, he heals them, he blesses them, he restores them, then why are we? I mean, why are we so easily annoyed? We're annoyed with the coworker who gets the promotion. We're annoyed with the person who's always posting about how great their kids are. And actually, we see something different here with Jesus. Jesus shows this love and grace to every single person. I know you hear this story, and maybe I'll just ask you for a moment, like, who do you identify with with in this story? I mean, you can't identify with Jesus because you're probably not going around healing anyone of a skin disease. So your choices are either you identify with the one, oh, I'm always the one, I'm always going back to Jesus, or maybe you for once, you begin to identify with the 9. I mean, they are the religious people in this story that Jesus is trying to kind of give this lesson to, right? I think this raises kind of some interesting things for us. Why is it that 100% of Christians always think they're in the 10% category when Jesus uses a teaching like this to remind the 90% of us, how we can begin to get it right. I think for me personally, when I read this story, I have to be honest in saying, you know what? Sometimes, a lot of the time, I could be wrong. I could very well be wrong in the way in which I'm treating other people, the way in which I show love and grace to people who annoy me. I could just be wrong. And I think when we begin to take that posture and begin to kind of see ourselves as the nine, as the ones who miss the mark, who get too annoyed, oh, those Republicans, oh, those Democrats, oh, the kid behind me kicking my seat on the airplane, right? When we can get beyond that, then we can actually begin to kind of change our mindset. What if instead of being annoyed, what if instead we showed concern? I actually think that's what Jesus is saying. I think actually the tone of Jesus is, hey, whoa, we're not all 10 cleansed? Where are the nine? And I don't think he's criticizing them. I actually think he's concerned about them. Where are the nine? Were they not all cleansed? Didn't it work? I mean, have they not realized it yet? Did someone not point out to them that they're healed, they're recovered? Is Jesus kind of saying to them, like, when I said go show yourself to the priest, I'm the high priest? I think what Jesus is showing is that these nine, they've received love and mercy. They've walked in the blessing, and yet they haven't experienced the freedom of what it means to follow Jesus. I think we kind of tend to side with, well, you know, they should get what's coming to them. I mean, they shouldn't get anything good. I mean, those nine, they're so ungrateful. Like they should be turned back into lepers or something. Like, we want some sort of retribution because of the way they acted. And yet there's this opportunity to live differently. There was a story I saw that I thought really illustrated this. It was of a 5-year-old boy in Utah. I don't know if you saw this story, but he got into an argument with his mom. Probably an argument where he should have been, like, grounded. But he argued with his mom because she would not buy him a Lamborghini. And so he was so frustrated that while the family was out not paying attention, he jumped into the family SUV and put $3 in his pocket. First of all, the kid has no idea how much a Lamborghini costs, but he decided to set out for California. He was going to drive to California and buy himself a Lamborghini. I will show my mom. 5-year-old kid. And what's amazing is he actually made it onto the on-ramp and merged into traffic where a Utah Highway Patrolman began to notice his erratic driving. In fact, what tipped him off is he could not see a head. He could just see a steering wheel driving down the road. And the dash cam is hilarious. The kid is actually pretty good on the lanes. I've seen some of us drive. And this kid was, like, in the lane. And then he started to merge and then got back over. And so the officer thought he had a drunk driver on his hands, pulled the kid over. The kid was obviously sober. And the dash cam is so enlightening. It actually talks about, like, he's talking to the kid. Kid, where did you learn how to drive? And they're having this whole exchange. And it kind of became one of these things that then social media got a hold of it. Because many thought that this kid should have been, you know, had the book thrown at him, and he should be fined, and he shouldn't get his license till he's, you know, much older. And these parents, where are these parents? You know, just letting the kid take the SUV. The kid actually made it 3 miles, by the way, in the right direction of California. Pretty bright kid. And what happened instead is he was certainly reprimanded, but some of what happened after that is certain celebrities who owned Lamborghinis came and made the kid a visit and took him for a ride in their Lamborghini. And the judge actually dropped all the charges, and the judge actually said, if Oprah is listening, maybe Oprah will buy you a Lamborghini. And it just kind of frustrated people because they wanted to see this kid sort of, you know, handled and dealt with and disciplined. And yet I think this is the way God works. I think God works in a way in which he goes over and above to show us that he loves us, that he cares for us, that he doesn't want to hold that against us. He instead wants us to grow into this best version, this whole version of who we could be. And I think that's where the conversation begins to go with the one, with the Samaritan. In fact, he says at the very end, in verse 17, he says these words. I've thought about these all week. He says to the one, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. I read that so casually the first few times, and I thought, well, what do you mean, make you well? Like, made you well. Like, he doesn't have leprosy anymore. Of course, he's well. And yet Jesus, I think, is going far deeper than just, let me use the pun, skin deep with this man. What he's saying to him is a life and a journey with me is going to go far more into this area of wholeness, where you're well, not just at the skin level, but you're well at your soul. You have been made well in all aspects of your faith. You came back to Jesus. I think this is the ultimate comeback story. This man comes back to Jesus, to the one who can make him well. And that's the opportunity that every one of us have with annoying situations and annoying people and the mess that is the world. I was thinking about it this way. What if we just left here today just with kind of one thought, one idea? What if you really tried to live this out? And I kind of put it in these words. What if this became kind of the way in which you lived, where you said everything about you says everything about you? You know that's true, right? I mean, everything about you says everything about you. And if you're the type of person where everything about you says, I regularly make it a habit, make it a practice, make it a discipline to spend time with Jesus. I talk to Jesus, I talk about my faults, I talk about where I miss the mark, and I regularly spend time with him. I'm trying to learn, I'm trying to follow his voice, I'm trying to know his word. If everything about you says that, then everything about you will say that to others. That's what your relationship with God looks like. But the opposite is true too. In fact, if everything about you says how annoyed you are with the world right now, how annoying that person, can you believe that person? If everything about you says the times when you say to someone else how annoying that person is, then I'm here to tell you that that'll say a lot about you as well. And then instead, we have this opportunity every single moment of every day to get as close to Jesus. And I think the closer you get, the more that annoying issues and annoying people and the hot messes and hot buttons all around you just begin to fade away. What if we began to be that as the church and we just said, you know, every day, everything about me is going to say everything about me and my relationship with God. Some of you might be saying this morning, I don't know how to do that. That seems really complicated. I want to tell you that you were created for connection with God, that God has put his fingerprint, that he has impressed upon you the opportunity to have life in him, and you can follow him at every moment of every day. I want to invite the worship team up because I believe this is a time when we can begin to do that now. We can begin to just grow in this idea of learning and knowing who Jesus is and begin to step into the opportunities to learn from him starting right now. And so maybe today, maybe right now, maybe you came in here and you're honest. You don't have annoying people or annoying issues around you, and you just use this opportunity to come back to God, to thank him again. And maybe this morning, maybe you've got a lot of opportunities and annoying issues and people around you to bring before the Lord. That's our opportunity. I was thinking this week about how just what an interesting time it is to be alive. You know, I think we miss these opportunities to just acknowledge how fortunate we are to be alive, no matter how difficult the world may seem to be. And yet, there's always these things that just kind of nip at our heels, right? I mean, it can be so easily annoyed by politics today or by social issues or by even trivial things. And yet, even though those are out there, there's never been a greater moment, a greater time than just to come back to Jesus and to spend time with him. I want to pray for you now. If you would simply close your eyes and bow your head, and let me just pray together for us. God, I'm so grateful for these moments that we have. This time together is just so precious. God, I'm thankful that we can sing and we can be together, that we can open up your word and we can truly find the way. And that way is through your son, Jesus. God, I pray as we take these moments and as we sing these next few songs that we would really inspect our own hearts and that we would bring our whole selves, all of us, to you, and we would just begin to work out all of the things inside of us, God. God, you have created us for this connection with you. So God, I pray that your spirit would just be clear among us. And as we give you this time, as we give you our worship, may it be what leads us into this next week. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
This podcast is a service of Bridgeway Community Church in Rockford, Michigan. Visit bridgewaycommunity.org for more information and other messages.